Hello, everyone, and welcome to Thrifters Villa, a podcast for resales and entrepreneurs. I'm Daniela, and I have a super fun episode to share with you guys. I got to sit down and chat with a New Englander. Her name is Kate, and you guys may have seen her on Instagram. She is the creative person out there, reseller, entrepreneur who takes leather goods and transforms them into the most amazing, colorful, beautiful pieces. She uses shaving cream and leather dyes and creates just beautiful pieces of art. And I cannot wait for you guys to get to know her. So I will see you at the table. Well, welcome everyone back to another episode. I have Kate here with me. And I'm sure you guys have seen her videos on Instagram, which is how I found Kate. And I'm excited to have you on here. Welcome to Thrifters Villa, Kate.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, this is very exciting because I love to rehab shoes and handbags, but like you have taken it to another level that I'm amazed by. So I'm excited to dive into all that. But before we get into the rehabbing and all that fun stuff that you've created, let the listeners know who you are, how you kind of got started in all this, because you started as a reseller and now you're kind of transitioning yourself.
Yeah. So how I kind of got started of all of it was, actually I used to just buy things off of Poshmark, and mm-hmm. I never sold things off of Poshmark. And when I was able to buy high end things for myself, usually they weren't of a lot of they weren't very in great condition. Let's just call it that way. And so during the pandemic, it became my hobby. I kind of was teaching myself how to rehab different items. And I found that there was a lot of misinformation on how to, especially with dye. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misinformation about how dyes work or leather in general. And a lot of it can be very confusing. And so I started practicing a lot on, I always practice on leather remnants, and I started doing a lot of my own work and putting it on Instagram. And I think the second video I ever did of dyeing something got to like 10 million views. And so that's one of my higher ones, but people hated it because people don't want to see. I get
that's wild to me because my reseller brain is like, well, it's great. I love to see things come back to life and then be able to sell it or keep
I know
it, whatever it is you want to do.
You know, it really gets to me about when I see those images, and I'm sure a lot of people who are resellers see those images of just mounds of clothing in like the Chilean desert or wherever those items are. And it just gets to me that we waste so much, and there's so much that we can do to rehabilitate and upcycle clothing and shoes in general. And I think it's just kind of a disappointment sometimes when it's kind of like a missed opportunity. This is something that we could have done to help not only the environment, but you know, there's so much out there that could still be used. And so I started teaching myself how to do different items. And then I started, when I was thrifting, I would see other items and I'd buy them and I'd put them on Poshmark. I started selling on Poshmark. And then people started asking me if they could send me their items. And then from there, I now have an Etsy where it's kind of interesting. People will show me their items. I'll give them a custom quote and then they'll send them in to me. But I do feel very passionately about that there are so many items that really could be made beautifully again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Were you a thrifter before this? Like, was reselling something you were doing before this, or did you kind of fall into it?
I kind of fell into it because, so, I mean, I even have, like, I have an eBay account, and I don't think I've really sold anything on it. I usually use those accounts to buy things. And I just kept seeing things that I could work on. And that's what I did was I just picked something up and I'd see if I could make it look better. And you know, it's a real learning process. I mean, there's a real learning curve that goes on with that. But I feel like I just really grew in my skills.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's you bring up so many good points about these items that are at the thrift stores or that people are selling or getting rid of. And a lot of them, they just need a little love. Like when I go to the thrift store and I find a great leather piece, for example, vintage Coach leather bags, people toss them because they look ruined, but they're not. Yeah. They just need to be washed and conditioned and just shown a little bit of love and they look brand new. They're even shoes. How many people have leather shoes? They have some scuffs and they just donate. I don't want them anymore. And then they buy new ones. It's like, well, no, if you just took a little time to understand the process of rehabbing it and cleaning it and making it look new again, dyeing it, painting it, whatever it is that you want to do to it, like you could have a brand new shoe again. The shoe is in great condition. You just got to fix the exterior of it. There's such, I think it's just the society that we live in, you know,
yeah.
We just mass consume and that's what we do. And being in the reselling world, you start to learn like, oh, there's some great opportunities out there that people don't even realize. And I had a friend of mine, Annette, was on here before who rehabs as well. And it's just like, there's so many people who have the skill of rehabbing things way more than like, I have basic knowledge of rehabbing. I enjoy it. It's therapeutic to me to do it. But like, when I see people like you that really dive in and get creative with it, it is so impressive because you really bring this piece that no one wanted anymore because maybe it had dye transfer on it back to life. And it looks like a completely new thing. And how fun is it for someone to buy a custom, because that's what it is, a custom piece.
I appreciate that. And I like to think of it that way too. And it's funny to me because there's a lot of pushback.
Yeah.
I get a lot of pushback sometimes about people saying that it's no longer, I dye a lot of Jimmy Choo and a lot
yeah.
of people say it's no longer Jimmy Choo. And I didn't do anything physically to the physical nature of the shoe, except for properties of dyeing it. And I mean, a lot of those shoes, especially the higher end shoes, those will last a lot longer and they're more comfortable to wear than synthetic leathers that have really hard soles. And so I just think it's unfortunate because, I mean, it's funny to me. So I do the same thing throughout different areas of my life. I like to buy broken jewelry and fix it up.
Oh, okay.
I have a dresser in my room that we bought for $15 and we stripped it down and we completely painted it and redid it over. And I find there's a lot of value in things that were made longer ago because the majority of the things in my house are antiques. And they work a lot better than the one couch that I bought in the last 10 years and is broken now. And so like, I feel it's really sad that we do live in this society that thinks that consuming and making and buying new things are the way to go all the time. And
yeah,
I feel bad that we don't hold it in a higher, respect about, you know, like taking care of your items. And even if you find something that's been used, making it brand new again. And so I like to try to do that throughout my life in different ways. I think I don't show the other parts of it, but what I do with the shoes and the leather items, I think that is probably the best representation of what I like to think is like upcycling fashion and making things have value again. Then, you know, so.
I love it. There, you had mentioned, you know, things from before just are a better quality. And especially I think when it comes to furniture, that's 100% true. If
yeah.
you are able to strip things down and then get it to the color that you want, because that's how Pottery Barn has it on their website, there are ways to do it and you have a piece that's going to last you 100+ years and all you have to do is just change the exterior of it. The interior generally is going to last forever because we just don't make pieces like that anymore.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, I think, and I love IKEA, don't get me wrong, I think about 13 years ago, I bought an IKEA set for my room and it was completely destroyed. My husband and I used to move around quite a lot, actually. And by the third or fourth move, it was just done. And then I have real wood items in my house that I think my great grandparents have had, and they're just, they last, you know?
Right.
And so I feel like it's unfortunate that there is that push. And I think there's a pressure too, that if don't, you know, buy these brand new things, that you're gonna look dated, or, you know, that it's not as appealing. And I think it's interesting too, cause you touched upon like scuffs or finding stuff that's dirty. And it's amazing. And I really highly encourage this, and I'm sorry that I'm saying it like this, but just cleaning and conditioning, and I'm sure you know this, just cleaning and conditioning something can give it a brand new life.
Yeah. Sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah.
You don't have to dye. You don't have to paint. You don't have to do anything to it. Just condition it, clean and condition it.
Yeah, I can't tell you, because now people send me things, and beforehand I ask for pictures, and there's so many times where I'll just charge them to clean and condition it, and it'll get here, and I'll just do that. Or somebody might send me something to dye. Somebody sent me a pair of their Gucci wedding heels, and they said that there were all these marks on it, and they were worried that they had to be dyed, but when they got here and I cleaned and conditioned them, I sent her the pictures, and she was like, no, I want to keep it that way. And I said, yeah, I thought so. So it's just amazing what basic cleaning and conditioning can do, and the livelihood, the longevity that can give an item.
Absolutely. I'm curious, how was the transition from like Poshmark, where you're just dealing with a transaction, compared to going over to Etsy? Like,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Because it's different. Etsy's different because you can do these types of things, custom orders and all of that. Yeah. Was it because of social media that it pushed you to get away from the Poshmark and focus more on Etsy? Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, so absolutely. So what I started doing was, as a reseller, I didn't know how to reach people. And my Instagram had been growing. And I think at around that time, I think I had like 10,000 followers on Instagram, which I still think was a lot.
It's more than me.
Yeah. I mean, like at that point I was like, oh, this could be a good base. And so I did transition over to TikTok at one point, and I started going live at night and just working on stuff and showing people, you know, and saying like, this will be on my Poshmark, my Poshmark closet. And then people started asking me to send me things. And I'm always very adamant. I'm not a cobbler. I can't do certain things. And if people send me pictures, I'll be like, this is a problem. A cobbler can fix it. I can't. But there are some creative things I can get around. I don't sew. I wish I did. I always wish I could sew a lot better. But there's a lot of things that I can do that sometimes go outside of, the sewing and whatnot, but it's been amazing to use TikTok and Instagram, and you never know. It's funny because you never know what's going to happen. I had a reel get to 10 million this week, and I just was like, well, okay, it's just a 3-second thing, but you know, when you do put yourself out there and you make little tiny reels and you just kind of show a little bit of the process, it can get people interested. And so it's been really interesting, and it's been fascinating. And when I go live on TikTok, that's usually a pretty good space too, because people want to know if they can send you things or where they can buy the things that you're working on. And so that's a really helpful tool as well.
What are you showing the people on TikTok? Can you walk us through like what that looks like? So you go live for how long?
So I go live on TikTok for an hour. It's usually like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it's weird because, I mean, you're in the Northeast. I go live at midnight.
How do you
Midnight.
feel like it, ma'am?
So I am a night owl, and like
Okay, well then that
I,
makes sense.
well, it's funny because my one of so not a lot of people or my neighbors don't really know that I'm on Instagram, which is funny. But one of them does, and she says she looks at my basement and she sees if my basement lights are on, that I'm probably working on shoes. And it's kind of funny because it's like the elves and the shoemaker, and I feel like I really fit into the, like those elves that work overnight. And so like so what I do is I have a space. There's usually a piece of cardboard because it get things can get messy, and you see my hands. It's usually like sometimes my nose is touching my screen because I'm so close. It's a little ridiculous. I'll just be cleaning something, or I'll be conditioning it, or maybe making an edge coat or working on some other aspect.
And you're walking them through it, right? What you're doing? Or no, just
Sometimes,
conversation.
yeah, sometimes it's conversation. It's funny because there, I didn't realize that people get notifications when I go live.
Oh, okay.
So I
On
have
TikTok,
like,
that's great.
yeah, it's kind of like Cheers where everybody knows your name. Like I have the same people come in, and so it's neat because people come in. Sometimes people will ask how to clean or condition their items, or generally I just will work on stuff, and I think that this is a good way for people to find me and then look at the other reels or TikToks or whatever. I will say that I do get a bigger audience within TikTok. But that's another thing to play around with if people are interested in going live and showing their items. One thing I would recommend is, play around with the time that you go live or whatnot. And it's funny because sometimes I've gone live at midnight and albeit have been live for an hour, and the highest amount of viewers I had was 45,000 people within the
I'm sorry,
hour.
Kate. That's a lot.
Is a lot. It is a lot. I was a little overwhelmed because I was dyeing something, and I got off, and it tells you. It's interesting how much free information you get from being on these social media platforms. And it said like 45,000 people had watched me. I think it was dye a pair of Jimmy Choos again, but
That's just mind blowing. 45,000 strangers
yeah.
staring at your
And then
hands.
but it's funny too because on the sometimes it's like you can go live and you might have like 1,000 people watch you for an hour, or you might have like I said, like it was 45,000. But anyways, I think it just kind of depends on what you how you set things up. I think TikTok likes it if you set it up like you're a little TV show, like you're QVC,
That makes
in
sense.
whatever you're selling or whatever. And that's how I kind of think about it. And that's why I do go live on certain nights at certain times, also so that they don't hear my kids yelling above my head.
You must get a big West Coast following then.
Yeah, it's funny. And then it's interesting too because I've tried to go live at like 2 p.m. And when I go live at 2 p.m., I did it a couple of times. I had a lot of people from Europe
Makes sense
reaching
because
out to
it's
me.
nighttime for them.
So usually wherever it's 8 p.m., that's where my I think my audience really
Well, that's
is.
that makes sense, right? It could be moms or people just getting home from work, decompressing, people that just finished cleaning up after dinner and they're like, all right, I'm just gonna sit and I'm gonna see who's live. And there's so many factors. I think that's 7 to 9 p.m. is like prime time for people to go on and like look at things.
Yeah, I think
Even
there's a reason why.
shopping.
But yeah, I'm sometimes I do go live, like usually there's a dye method I do with the shaving cream. I let that sit for, yeah, that's the crazy one that people really don't like sometimes, but usually that has to sit for 4 hours. So what I do is I dye it at 8, and I go live and I dye it at 8 live. Then 4 hours later, it's midnight and I clean it off. So usually that kind of, if I organize myself to do it at that point, that kind of helps.
You've never gone live on Instagram, have you? Or I haven't seen you go live on
I
Instagram.
have. I have gone live on Instagram, but Instagram is trickier for me because I'll go live on Instagram and I'll have like maybe 200 people see me in the same time that, 10,000 people might see me on TikTok. And it's very interesting between the two because I feel that Instagram is very tailored and everything wants to look very pretty. And I feel like on TikTok, it's kind of more like, what are you doing and what your scope is, and just kind of like talking about it and like you're a mini TV show.
That's interesting. Have you ever thought about, I'm rambling at this point, but have you ever thought
No.
about the live selling platforms and basically doing what you're doing on TikTok and getting people to buy items that you are dyeing or that you've made? Like, is that something that's ever crossed your mind?
I have to look more into that because sometimes people are like, how can I buy this? And I'm like, this belongs to somebody. Somebody sent this to
Yeah,
me.
you can't buy
But like,
it.
I'd be like, I know because I'm dyeing a Louis Vuitton Elma purse right now, and I love what I did to it, but it's not mine and I can't keep it. Cause like, if you're a reseller, you can buy stuff and you're like, oh, I like this one thing, and I'll keep this one thing and maybe I'll sell something else that I and I never keep anybody's stuff that they sell to me, but I'm like, oh, I did a really good job on this one, and I kind of wish I could keep it right now. So, but no, I should look into that because I think that that could be helpful in what I'm doing anyways. But usually, if I'm working on something, I'll just say, here's my link in bio. I'm on Poshmark.
I just think it's an interesting the way that you're doing on TikTok. In my head, I'm like, well, I think this would translate to live sales, and I think it'd be another audience that you could tap into because no one's really doing that, as far as I know, when it comes to live selling. A lot of it in the clothing world, anyway, it's like, here's some pieces and here's how they can mix and match together, where yours is more of like a DIY, but a teaching lesson, but then also you can buy it. Like, I feel like there's a creative way that you could do it, but it would be one more thing, right, to add in to your routine.
Yeah, and it's funny because like I have a YouTube channel too, and I've
Oh,
been
you
meaning to
do.
get to it. I know it's silly. I've been meaning to get back to it too because
You need to, so then I
I
can
should.
just subscribe and then I'll just learn all the things from you.
I should, but like I should be on that. But that's the problem is like they're all so different on editing. And I think a huge part of it's funny too because when I edit something on TikTok or Instagram, I usually know the song that I want to use for it, and the license agreements and the license issues with YouTube.
YouTube.
I don't use any music, and it's super boring. So, like, I'm sure nobody wants to listen to 5 minutes of how I dyed something without something in the background.
I don't know, because I've looked up videos like that before. I'm like, okay, I have this piece. I'm not really sure what to do. And like, I find some guy in his basement just kind of like showing me it. And like, it's a blurry video. And I'm like, all right, cool. This is all I got. So this is what I'm gonna watch. I think there's a creative way. So like, I have a Mac, for example. So when I was making YouTube videos, because I stopped over the last year and a half, because it's just that one more thing, right? That like, don't feel like doing. iMovie has free music that you can use. It's an option. You can also buy licensing for, like, there's, programs that you can pay yearly fees and you can get licenses for all this stuff, but it's like, it is an added step when it comes to the music thing, where Reels can catch you for that 30 seconds and it's got that fun music and someone can just keep going back to it and looking. It's different. But I do think there's value in creating a YouTube video on, I think, the shaving cream thing, which I want to get into all that stuff, but like that in particular, because it is fascinating that the process and the way that the dyes come out on the shoe, and I think things like creative things like that, people are always looking for, and they just don't. There isn't really a ton of content on it. There's a lot of cobbler content, like how to change the heel caps and all that kind of stuff. But actually, like, diving into what you do in particular, I don't see a lot of it.
And the, well, and I will say this too, because I've looked up and I'm like, I wonder what, because when I was teaching myself, I was like, I wonder what they're saying. And so, like, one of the first things I dyed, and I don't recommend this, is I did find, I bought myself a Louis Vuitton patent leather. It was a Vernis. I probably am pronouncing that wrong, but it was a bag.
The like top handle.
Yeah. One. And it has Vaschetta. It's, you know, it has the Vaschetta handle.
Yep.
And I dyed it, and I dyed it after watching a video, and it was terrible. I worked on that bag for like 6 months, and it was really difficult, and I had to just kind of put it down because I just wasn't getting anywhere with it, and I was feeling bad about that. I mean, it was a really beat up bag beforehand, and it was for me. And so then, instead of working on that, and you can find this on Etsy or like eBay, I buy a lot of leather remnants, and I practice ideas on leather remnants beforehand. And I actually go to a place. So we're both in New England. I go
we're
to very Maine.
We're near each other.
yeah. So I'm sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. But like,
no. I don't. They know where I'm from. It's fine.
I go to Maine, and there's a salvage company. Called Martin's, and they sell leather remnants for I think it's like $6 a pound.
Okay.
And so every time I go up to visit family, I just go get more leather remnants, and I bring it home, and I try out new ideas, and I try different things. And that's really been helpful because then I can learn on something that I don't care about. Like, you know,
and on different leather grains too, and different types of leather, because I think people forget that there isn't just one type of leather. Like, there are some that are more porous than others. There are some that are thicker, some that are thinner, some that have finishes on them. Like, so I enjoy watching one of the Instagram guys, Tanner or something. He like takes
Tanner
the handbags.
Leatherman. Yeah.
If I can get him on this podcast, it is on my list because I am fascinated by what he does. Like, and the way he breaks it down and explains it. And it's like, I never looked at leather that way. Like, yeah, leather's great. Like, to really understand the differences between it all. Well, it makes sense why some leather things that I have tried to fix didn't work. Well, because that type of leather, it wouldn't work. I'd have to take extra steps that I didn't know about.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I mean, I eventually, and I want to say this, I eventually did make the Louis Vuitton item look better, the bag that I dyed. But it did take a lot of time. And I will say that I find that, I don't know what his name is, but I know the guy that you're talking about, Tanner Leatherman. And it's funny because his approach to leather, and it's funny because from his perspective, he wants to see the imperfections in the grains.
Yes.
He wants to see the veins. He wants to see all of that stuff. And for me, and he doesn't like the heavily coated Saffiano items, he doesn't like seeing some of those leathers that I really truly like. And it's funny because his perspective about the leather that he likes affects how he discusses some of those leathers too.
Yeah,
and I know that he doesn't like heavy top coats or heavy
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Resins or colors or
anything
like that would be on a piece of leather. But that's, I think, where I do like it, because I mean, there are a lot of different types of leathers, and the more that I got into it, the more that I started researching, you know, leather and leather craft and, leather tanneries where all the leather is created and how some of those leathers are created. And it is really fascinating for me. But it does also help me figure out why something's not working. You know, sometimes when I use leather dye on patent leather, there can be problems.
I had a problem not too long ago, and I gave up, and the shoe is still sitting up there because I was like, I shouldn't have dyed this. Okay.
Was it splotchy? Did it come kind of, so I,
and it has like a weird residue on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens a lot of the time. And I mean, it's funny because now that I have the Etsy part of it, I've actually talked to a lot of cobblers, and one cobbler, I don't want to say his name, but he said that his father, like back in the 60s, hated leather dye so much that he'd call him in and he'd sit down and he'd dye all the shoes for his dad, and he was like 10 years old because his dad couldn't stand it. And it's funny because a lot of cobblers, I do think, come up against, because they get a lot of reactions too, and some of them aren't good when they redye items as well. But dye is particularly difficult. And I think the thing I like to, and it's hard because you the way you can think about it is, if you and I you have say use the same foundation, it's going to look different because our skin, you and I don't have the same skin. And the same thing happens with leather sometimes. If you're using a product that you think is going to go really well on leather dye or leather product, like dyeing it or sometimes even conditioner, there can be some problems with that too. And sometimes it's just the way that the leather was made. Sometimes it's the personal history of, was something abrasive used to clean this leather item, and now it's got this residue on it that's affecting the dye that's coming on. Is there a chemical reaction? So I think that there's a big, huge, it's a really wide open topic that I think people don't understand because they do think all leathers are the same,
And
and
they're
I think
not.
no, I mean the leather that you get from, a company maybe that sells a shoe for $100 versus for $1,000, it's going to be a lot different.
Yeah, absolutely. And we keep hinting towards all these different things, dyeing and stuff. So let's talk about what is your favorite method of rehabbing shoes? Is it dyeing? Is it using the shaving cream method? Like, what brings you the most joy when you're doing this?
Well, I love cleaning and conditioning it, and I can't say enough for just cleaning. Now, if you have a suede item, there's certain ways that you can go about. You have to use mink oil spray. But my favorite thing is cleaning and conditioning it, because a lot of the times when somebody has something, if you spent thousands of dollars on an item, I could very well see somebody being nervous just to clean and condition it, because you never know, especially if it's like suede or a patent leather, if it's an exotic leather like snakeskin, there's a lot of there's a lot of different ways that you could potentially ruin those leathers if you don't clean it right. So I always think cleaning and conditioning, that's what I always try to discuss firsthand, because I have a lot of people that when a reel goes viral or something, they're like, "What paint are you using?" And it's usually dye. And they're very different. Paint and dye are very different things. And I can get into that in a second too, but I'm always about cleaning and conditioning firsthand, because sometimes that just makes the difference. And like you just said it too, it makes a world of difference.
I think you need a course. I think you need to create a course so that I can buy it and that I can just learn all the things.
Somebody said that too. Some I get messages from India, because India is not allowed to use TikTok. So I get a lot of messages from India saying, "I can't go on TikTok and watch you live. Can you go on Instagram?" And that's what I do, is I do try to jump on Instagram so that people in other places can watch me as well. But that would be something to consider about using a course, because or making a course, because that probably would be helpful for other people.
This is just me marketing you out and all these different things you need to do in your business. This is great. I'm going to share personal experience when it comes to or I guess a question more than anything when it comes to conditioning, because I think there are so many products that are out there on the market and so many people get confused on what's a good product to use. Is there a certain oil that's better than another oil? Like I remember when I first started reselling, everyone always talked about the Dr. Martens Balsam Balm. Like that was the be all end all. And when I had tried it, I actually didn't like it on a lot of my products. And I ended up finding a mink oil that I really enjoyed. But what I learned was mink oil on certain leathers actually changed the color of what it was. And I didn't, and I was panicked because I was like, now it's completely different. It's not at all what it was before. And it's like trying to understand all these different products that exist, because there's a lot out there, even in terms of cleaner. Like, you can, certain things you can just dunk in warm soap water and let it soak and do its thing and gently clean it. Some things you can't do that. You have to do it by hand, and you need to like gently rub. So it's like, there's so much. So what would you say to people who are like, okay, I can clean and condition, I don't really feel comfortable dyeing yet or doing any of that. Where should they look and what products should they consider?
So I always like to do the least invasive stuff first. I always try to do, and that's why I clean and condition first, is that's the least invasive measure. And I usually know that that's going to get an item clean enough to even just resell. The thing that I use, Angelus products, because they've been very kind to me. They give me a lot. They give me some products to help use. They've worked really close with me, and they've been very kind. They reached out to me, and I'm one of their sponsored artists, and I just say that just for transparency. But they're super
You plug
kind.
Yourself as you should.
Well, but they're a fantastic company, and I got a really awesome opportunity. I got to rewrite the frequently asked question section of their cleaning on their website. And sometimes they take like my thoughts and my questions into consideration. And they've made some products that I was like, hey, why don't you make this? And I don't want to say it's because of me, because I don't know if it's because of me, but they have made some products when I've asked them about it. And so like, that's been really neat. And they're really kind-hearted, and they're very helpful. And they want people to have good experience with their products as well. And now they're making, and it was great, and I'm really excited for it, because they're making dyes that can be shipped across the country and across the world. So they're low VOC, something like that. I haven't got my hands on them yet. I want to. I haven't used them yet. But I do love their dyes. And I mean, there are some other things that I've used from other competitors and whatnot. But I do love the line of Angelus items, and Easy Cleaner is by far one of my favorites. And I use it a lot. I use it to clean the interior of shoes as well as the exterior. It cleans so much.
It's a gentle soap, right?
It's like a gentle cleaner. It has a very gentle, very mild smell to it. And it works really well, especially on suede. So I had a pair of Charlotte, what are they called?
Olympia.
Yes, Charlotte Olympia. I was going to say Ruse, but that's going to be totally
No, that's wrong.
Yeah. No, Charlotte Olympia, I had Dolly suede heels, and they were all marked up. They was a tan suede. I think the color is actually fawn or something like that. And I used the suede cleaning kit, which is a suede block and a nylon brush, and I cleaned that off. And then after, I used Easy Cleaner, and it just took all the other, it took everything else away from that. And once it dried, I brushed up the nap, and it looked so much better. And I put a protective spray on it from Angelus, and it's all Angelus products. But they work really well together. And I think one thing that I really want to work on too is, I hear a lot of people talk about suede, and like a lot of people come up and talk about like how difficult suede is, because it's such a, it's so difficult because it's such a beautiful cut of leather.
I genuinely feel bad when I have to clean suede, because it's so pretty.
Yeah.
But you have to make it prettier to sell.
Yeah. No, and it could be hard, because you're just right, and you hit the nail on the head, that mink oil, it's wonderful. And mink oil spray is probably, I think it's the only type of conditioning agent that you can use on suede. So if you have a suede item that feels rough, if you clean it, And once you let it dry, you can use mink oil spray on it. And I believe it's the only thing that can condition suede, because suede is the flesh of leather. And so it does a huge world of difference. But suede is a very finicky type of leather anyways. But no, I use a lot. Pretty much everything I use is Angelus. I have two other products that aren't Angelus, and I never use them anyways, just because I know Angelus so much anyways.
Your dye selection is amazing.
Oh yeah, and you can combine them too. You can combine the dyes.
I didn't know that.
So one thing is you can combine dyes to make custom colors, which I do. And then you can combine the dyes with their luster cream, which is kind of a thicker conditioner. And you can make your own colored conditioner. So a lot of the times there are conditioners that have dye in it so that it kind of recolors the bag.
Right.
And I can make my own with Angelus dyes and with their luster cream. And sometimes it's all that you need and you don't even have to dye the bag. You can just use that instead.
That's a great point, because I think a lot of us in the reselling world are quick to dye or do something extreme to the piece, where sometimes the balm is all that you need. You don't need to sit there and be dyeing the piece. Sometimes the balm is enough.
And you know, the thing about leather conditioners, and I just want to say this because you brought this up, and I'm sorry. But you digress as much as you want. I know that it's really confusing, because when I started, I was like, why are there so many leather conditioners?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Why are there so many of them? But then it kind of clicked, because one night I have a makeup routine. I have a retinol and everything. And I'm putting this moisturizer on my face, and I changed the moisturizer and it was crap. And I was like, oh, okay. This is how I can explain it to people, because my skin has gotten used to this moisturizing component and likes it. And if I use this other thing, you know, my skin, it doesn't work as well for me. And I think that you could say that about a lot of different leather products is, you know, there's lots of different types of leathers, but even when you have lots of different types of leathers, there are leathers that are poorer grade versus higher grade one. And they all kind of use conditioners in different ways. And so that there is a lot of confusion with conditioners, but I always think about it as, you know, what kind of leather do you have? And then what are the conditioning agents that you could technically use on it? Because you don't want to use a leather conditioner on suede, because it will ruin it. It'll just get all matted up and thick, and you can never really take it out. And I hear a lot of people that didn't know that, and they'll send me like a DM and they'll be like, can you help me with my suede item? And I'm like, what did you use? And it'll be something that will have ruined the suede. And then I have to break the bad news to somebody that suede item is. Yeah.
And that's like probably one of the most disappointing things. And this is where I want to go back to what you said about getting these scrap pieces or going to the thrift store and buying these like destroyed pieces that you can just test on. Cause I think that's the only way to really learn and make those mistakes. When you make that mistake on an item that you want to sell that maybe you've paid up for and you're like, okay, I can do this. And then you've destroyed it. You can't go back sometimes.
No, you want to cry. I mean, I think in the beginning, I think I cried over like one or two things. It was all stuff that I was doing for myself at that point and not even reselling. It was just the beginning of just me like doing things to my own leather items. But I will say that even if I had a pair of suede shoes and they were ruined, I still think there is some value in the fact that I still like them. And there's something that you can still do. Now, technically it would probably further ruin the shoe, but I would probably do something crazy, like glue rhinestones onto it or something like that afterwards. Just like, if it's for me and if it were ruined and I didn't care, it's kind of fun. The thing I like about getting something that's like absolutely disheveled or ruined is you really can only go up. if you dye it and it's not great, if you got it for the right price and it's really rough looking, I think that you really can only just go up and make it look a lot better.
Yeah. I'm sure people are wondering, okay, there's leather dyes and there's leather paints. What's the difference and when can I use one versus the other?
So I always love when people ask me that because I think sometimes people think that they're the same thing. And
They
they're
are
really
very
not.
different.
Yeah, they really are very different. So I personally like leather dyes. I wouldn't say more than paints. I do end up using leather dyes, I think, more than paint. But leather dye, it chemically bonds to whatever you're dyeing. So there are suede dyes as well. So when you're using that, it's chemically binding to your leather item. So that means it's absolutely permanent. So if you have leather paint, on the other hand,
Right.
it physically bonds to the item. And
Right.
so if you make a mistake, and it can be hard to do so, but you can take leather paint off, you can sand it down sometimes, depending on the thickness of leather. But paint is a little bit more flexible. You know, if you're starting
Right.
out, and you're not so sure, paint is a little bit more forgiving than dye. And then there's some things that I probably wouldn't use paint on. I don't usually paint patent leather because technically you have to sand it down for it to adhere
Okay.
correctly. And at that point, I think that that would cause more issues to the shoe and it probably would look worse. And you can't use paint on suede because that ruins the suede. So for suede items and patent leather, I always use dye. For exotic items, exotic leathers, I don't dye them all that much, but I would just use dye for exotic leathers too. A lot of the grain leathers, that's where you can really shine with some of those paints and do different things with, and you can still use dye on leather and full grain leather items as well.
Yeah, I just think there's always that like pause, right? Because I've had it too sometimes where I'm like, do I use a dye on this or can I paint it? And I find that yes, the paint sometimes is easier to like because you can easily coat something and you're like, okay, this is done. The dye just has a different look to a piece,
Yeah.
especially when it's a shoe. With a handbag, sometimes it just needs a touch up and I don't feel like dyeing because then I've got to like do more to it. But like I can touch up a little bit with the paint or I can touch up a little bit with the balm and it would be fine. But I've personally struggled with that too. Sometimes I'm like, I don't really know what the right course of action is here, but we're gonna try one and we're gonna figure it out. I do think there's a lot of that goes on when it comes to rehabbing, be either dye or paint.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree, and I think a longer time ago, because I think I've only been doing this, how many years I've been doing this? Well, it's really started in the pandemic. I did paint things before the pandemic, but I was using normal acrylic paint, which just cracks
Okay.
and flakes
That's
off.
right. Well, it's the thing with paint too, is you need to put different top coats on it. Like it you can't just leave it. And same with dye though, because I have put different glazes and stuff on a dye.
You can like that, and but that sometimes that comes down to, so sometimes with a dye, a lot of the times, especially if it's patent leather. So patent leather, how it's made is it is usually three coats of a polyurethane. It's a plastic like
Yep.
coating, and it's done by a tannery. So wherever these shoe companies are getting it, there's probably a lot of different tanneries. But it's a lot of the same. Now, I think some companies use older methods because it gives it a different shine. I'm not 100% sure. It's a theory I have. And I don't want to sound pretentious and a know-it-all because I'm not that. But patent leathers do differ from company to company, of course. And sometimes some of them are a lot easier to dye, and sometimes some of them are a real challenge. And it usually comes down to, however they were made at those tanneries.
With patent leather, do you deglaze first before? Okay.
Yes. I always deglaze except for suede. So suede, I don't deglaze because it's just what I do with suede is I use the suede kit to clean it off as much as possible. Because if you have anything on your leather product, and especially if it's like a chemical, if it's something that will mix with the dye and mess it up later, that's where you're going to get into trouble with that. But no, I do deglaze with the usually I use acetone nail polish. Angelus has a deglazer and it works really well, but I like stuff that's the acetone nail polish remover that I use is, I think, a little bit on the gentler side because it's not completely. So I usually use some sort of acetone product to deglaze, and then I'll put the dye on, and then I actually deglaze it off again.
Oh,
so like
okay.
I'll dye and then I'll clean it up because the excess is, there's a lot of dye that can be on some of those items afterwards.
Yeah. So I had this pair of Jimmy Choo's, like the traditional like platform stiletto heel, what, I don't know what it's called, but that they have. And it was a project. I was like, I've never been successful with patent leather. They were like that ugly beigey tan color and they had marks all over it. And I was like, well, I'm going to try black and I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens. I deglazed. I put the dye on it. I realized how much dye actually absorbed into the patent leather. And I was like, oh my God, it's dripping. Like it was, I didn't realize that that's what would happen.
Yeah.
But then I didn't deglaze after. I didn't know that that was a thing that you could do. And I let it sit and I looked at it and I was like, why does it look this way? Like it looked bumpy. It had residue on it. And no matter what I do, I can't fix it. So they're just sitting up there because I don't know what to do with them. But I feel like patent leather, like suede, is another one that people are like, I don't want to mess with this because it can be complex, given even what you just explained, different top coats, different, you know, there's just a lot of components to it that sometimes you can't control.
Yeah. And even like, so I don't know. And I think that's the hard point sometimes too, because when I talk to cobblers, some of them are very kind and they share secrets with me, and I don't want to alienate the things that they share with me because I appreciate their, you
of
know,
course.
But I do end up using the deglazer a lot, and I do end up, that's actually how I can make ombre on patent leather.
Mm-hmm.
Patent leather shoes. And for me, I love patent leather. I love damaged patent leather. I love when somebody
says, you're so good at it though, Kate. You're so good at it.
but sometimes it's really difficult. And the way that I see patent leather, it's like watercolor paper. And the way that I see the dye is like watercolors. And it clicks for me in that way. And it's funny because when I'm doing this stuff, it helps to click. And I think it helps other people too, if I can kind of relate some of these leather things to other knowledge that like can help people out. And so like, I just really like playing around with patent leather as much as I can. And that's harder because I can't buy remnants that way. I've been looking to see if I can. It's a harder leather to find in remnants, I believe. And so I love playing around with patent leather. I love doing different things with it. It's my favorite thing to dye. But then at the other end of it, there have been things where I'll dye something. I had a customer, she sent me a pair of shoes, and I dyed it and one shoe wouldn't dye, just one.
Huh.
One shoe wouldn't dye. And so what I did was she wanted them black. And I said, okay. And so what I did is I ended up mixing a different dye. I used Angelus black and it wouldn't take to one shoe. And then I took in a different color dye and I was mixing it with the black. And for some reason that worked on it better, but it was just the one shoe. And so it's, and she has it now. It turned out really great. And I think part of it too is, one of the shoes was missing part of the polyurethane that makes the patent leather shine. So that area wasn't dyeing correctly.
Yeah.
I had somebody else send me a shoe. And that's one of my bigger reels too, is they wanted the marble dye effect. And when I dyed it, parts of the shoe didn't dye because the polyurethane was gone because they had used rubbing alcohol to clean the shoe.
Okay.
And that had stripped the polyurethane off of it. It had complicated things. And so it's weird because that one shoe, I dyed most of it. And I never do this, but I painted I painted where the polyurethane was gone because it felt like sandpaper. You know, patent leather shouldn't feel like sandpaper. And it stinks because when you do something, you put it on Instagram, people hate it, but you're like, this feels like sandpaper. Like there's nothing else that we can do to make this. And that customer was really happy with getting that shoe back. But it was that shoe took me a long time because then I had to kind of replicate the polyurethane shine on it too. So,
Very
you know,
complex.
it's funny because it's like a case by case scenario sometimes when something comes in. And you know, and it's funny to me because people send me things, and once I really truly get it in the mail, I'll be like, oh, I've dealt with this before. I'm like, oh, this is new. I got to ask the person what they used, you know, because that's going to help me figure out what I have to do.
Can I ask a question about the shaving cream? Why
Sure.
shaving cream?
So it's funny, and
Oh, before you answer, for those who don't know, Kate uses shaving cream and dye and does this really cool, like, ombre marbling. I don't know. It's really pretty on patent leather and it's beautiful. Anyway.
Yeah, no. So, okay, a while back I saw because I follow Rit too. I love Rit products. I follow Rit on Instagram, and they had used shaving cream to dye some sort of, you know, cotton, something like that. And I messaged Angelus and I said, could you do this with your dyes? And they said, funny you ask, we're making something right now for that. And I was like, okay. And so they had gone along with a YouTuber who kind of ruins Nike Air Force Ones on purpose. He doesn't. I shouldn't say that because he has fun with them, but sometimes they don't. People get very opinionated about his work. And they did Air Force Ones, brand new Air Force Ones that they put into a big tub full of the shaving cream and the dye. And that's the first time I dyed something, I put heels in a bucket. But afterwards, and it's great for the outside, but the interior, it's just not made for shaving cream. And so I was like, well, I gotta change up how I do this. But they look incredible. And this technique really looks incredible on patent leather. And I don't even know what it is, but something about the shaving cream just brings back to life the patent leather too. And you wouldn't think it is because there's layers of it, the polyurethane. It's like, what is this? So I'm sorry, but
No, it's okay.
it is messy. And I do dye on TikTok, and it's funny now because like I can balance a shoe on my finger while I'm dyeing it. And like
That's a
I think
talent.
I'm funny. I think I'm funny, but you know, also, yeah, it's a really funny talent to have. But they come out really beautiful. And then usually I dye them a second time so that they look really uniform. And that's usually the dyes that if people are sending me a pair of Jimmy Choos, and it's always Jimmy Choos. Everybody wants to send me their Jimmy Choos, and I love dyeing Jimmy
That's
Choos.
because those reels are so therapeutic to watch. Never mind, because when you take the shaving cream off, it's like, wow, look at
Yeah.
that. And then you reflect it in the light. Oh, it's perfect, Kate. You've got it down. It's great.
And it's so fun. I love when people want to do that. Now, I have dyed some grain leathers like that. It's just not the same,
I was gonna
though,
say, I
but
can't
it's really
imagine it'd
fun.
be the same. The color, I would assume, is not as vibrant.
It's not as vibrant. And then sometimes, like some, I just dyed a Prada belt. Somebody sent me a full grain Prada belt and they wanted the shaving cream thing. So I really had to clean out. I have a good space in my basement for all of this, but it was a very long strip that I dyed. And then afterwards, the pink just didn't pop as much as it wanted. So I went back in with the leather paint. And then I sealed it with a top coat. But the marbling dye, it's really fun. And I really love using it on patent leather. And I'm hoping that people can see the potential in it because that gets a lot of flack as well. But it makes it just so beautiful. And sometimes it's sad because my phone just doesn't do it justice on how vibrant And how beautiful it is.
And how custom it is. Like, no one's going to have a pair of Jimmy Choos that look like that unless they've done it themselves or come to you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. A cobbler reached out to me and he said, how do I do this? And I explained it to him. And he's like, can I just send it to you? And I was like, yeah, we can do that. And I was like, cool. No big deal. And so he sent it to me. And then this is a problem that happens. And the dye got on the interior of this Jimmy Choo clutch. And so then I recolored the interior with something called Too Soft and the leather paint. You can use the leather paint for other things too.
Yeah.
Including metal. There's somebody that uses the leather paint with something called Too Hard, and they do like fire extinguishers.
Wow.
You can like, it's impressive what you can use this paint on. And so like I mixed mine with Too Soft. I mixed it to match the outside of the purse, and then I recolored the interior. And it's just a bright pink interior now that matches some of the pink flames on the outside of it. And so, I sent it back to him, and he and his sister, who I think they're cobblers together. They really liked it. And it's crazy because you can't see how vibrant it is unless you were holding it.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I love it.
I think it's a fun thing to do. I know people are very, very one side or the other, but I do.
You know what it reminds me of, Kate? Like preschoolers and how they play with shaving cream with food coloring. That's what it reminds me of, because that's what I did when I used to teach preschoolers. It was like the best thing for them to have shaving cream and food coloring, and their hands would get all gross, but they had so much fun doing it, and they would like put it on paper and make these really cool designs. Like, that's what I think of.
It's a lot of fun. It can get very messy, and then like I've learned a lot, because I think I've dyed now, I want to say I think I've dyed like 30 or 50 things doing this marbling shaving cream thing. And really it's interesting to me, because when people were using it for Air Force Ones, they'd use like, I think several containers, maybe up to 6 or 7 containers of shaving cream. Now I can use one container of shaving cream for like 3 different shoes.
So
like I think it's a little bit, I've gotten really a lot better at it, but you know, that's because I practice and I do it all the time.
Can we talk about Air Force Ones and the amazing Air Force Ones that you made that replicated Blake Lively's dress? That was that 2 years ago now? Is that 2 years ago?
I think it's coming up to it.
Right?
Yeah, we could talk about that. Yeah.
This is how I found Kate. Like, I don't even know how you popped up on my page. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen before.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, they did. Yeah. They did take a lot of time. I do what I always did. I bought a pair of Converse and I practiced on them. They're still downstairs in my basement. And what I did was I made like 10 to 12 drawings. So I drew the ideas down.
It really showcased your creativity and your capability of what you can do. Like, it's not just the marbling, it's not just reconditioning things, whatever. Like, you really have the craft to be creative and paint. And I mean, you're artistic. You are. You're very good at that. And the way that you put the rhinestones on it, the way that you designed with this tiny, tiny little, paintbrush, the little edges. And it's like, that not only does it take time, but it takes talent.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So my favorite part of that whole thing was there's a part of the shoelaces for the Converse. What I did with the laces for the Converse is I changed them from being, they went from like the rust to the patina copper, like the copper color to the patina copper color, which is, green. But at the end of the laces, I painted the constellations on the laces. And that was all freehand too. And I had to practice like drawing that out beforehand.
Yeah. But
I kind of went off the deep end. I made a lot of sketches for that.
I feel like that
that real, I don't know how it's doing or how it did, but I feel like that really pushed you out even more into not even just the reselling community, but a community in general of people who were amazed by your work. And I feel like there's been consistent growth since that time.
And I think I gained like maybe 1,000 followers. But it's funny because sometimes like I've had a reel go to 10 million and I'll gain like 300 people. I had a reel go to like 6 million and it was one of those shaving cream dyes. And that gave me about, I think, 50,000 people following me after
Wow.
that. And so I was just like, okay, because like, and I don't know if people think I buy followers. I don't buy followers.
She doesn't have time to do that, guys.
I don't like, because somebody said something to me at one point, and I was like, I don't, no, it's fine. I don't buy followers.
You can think
But
what you
like,
want.
I was like, oh, okay, whatever.
Right.
But you know, but that, but I've been able to do a lot of really interesting things, and I'm really grateful for it. And I mean, I really love getting, I mean, it's so weird, but I just love the more damaged something is. I just feel like there's so much more potential that you can do with it. So
Yeah.
I really feed off of that.
I love that. I'm very impressed by you, and I think the work that you do is amazing. And everyone who's listening, I'm gonna leave the links to the reels in the show notes. I'll leave a few links down. I'll definitely leave Kate's Instagram on there. Make sure you give her a follow. If you're on TikTok, follow her there. What's your TikTok? Is it the same
Same
as your
thing.
Instagram?
It's so
Okay.
stupid. So it's Sunny Varble. I made it up when I was like 16. My
Right.
husband and I were like, should we like rebrand me or whatever? And I was like, I
Yeah.
don't know what I would like call myself after like all of this time.
Right, right.
So it's really silly, but it's just Libra Venus backwards. It's just my 16-year-old self thought I was so cool that I was putting things
Yeah.
backwards, and
Of course. I
here
mean,
we
that was
are.
a cool thing to do. So
And now people are like, what is this? What
Yeah,
is this?
what's your name?
Yeah. How do
Well,
I pronounce
I
it?
know. I'm not gonna lie. I looked at it too and I was like, I don't know. Her name's Kate. That's what we're going with.
Oh, I know. I get that a lot because people are like, what?
Yeah. No, that's not her name.
No, it's just Kate.
Thank you so much for doing this and giving us an inside look of what it's like to do all this in your life and the business that you've created. And I think it's going to go much further than where you are now. I think this is just the beginning for you.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really sweet. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry it kind of took me a while, but I
Well,
really
it's
appreciate
fine.
it. And it's been so nice getting to talk to you.
Yeah, I know. We'll have to set up a time to actually meet in person because we're right near each other.
I know, it's so funny.
I know. There's a lot of us out here in New England. There's a whole
I'm
big
sure, yeah.
community of us.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to also being, you know, in New England and being maybe frugal isn't the word, but I think people in their certain areas of the country that just really can appreciate trying to get the most use out of certain items.
Yeah.
And
And I think we're
so,
surrounded by so many great things and so many great pieces that it almost is like, well, why wouldn't we? You know, why wouldn't we go in this direction? Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Again, all of Kate's information will be in the show notes. So make sure you go and give her a follow, and we will be back next week. Bye, everyone.